You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 9:59 a.m. Next up is American Standoff with Jacqueline Keeler.
I'd like to welcome you, this is Jacqueline Keeler, to this new KBOO FM Portland show called American Standoff. And in the show, we examine the current political from an Indigenous perspective, given by myself, a Native journalist based here in Oregon. And, you know, a year ago, on January 6th, 2021, we all saw thousands of supporters of former President Trump gather in D.C., and challenge the election, trying to prevent the certification of it, and then actually breaking in and storming the Capitol, and these insurrectionists included, you know, folks that we've seen on our own streets here in Portland over the past few years, and we actually also saw our own state capitol being stormed on December 21st, 2020, and. Actually assisted by a former state representative, Mike Nierman, and then who has since been expelled by the state house after evidence came forward demonstrating that he colluded with pro-Trump and anti-mask demonstrators to allow them into the building. And so today we're going to take another look at taking something that happened in out of the news recently and see how that applies to this issue of rising white nationalism in this country and how that's impacting the functioning of democracy. And we're going to be looking at Senator Mitch McConnell's description of Black Americans and what that his recent misspeaking that he later tried to correct and what that says about the United States, voting rights, and white supremacy. Last week Senator Minority Leader Mitch McConnell faced a lot of backlash after implying they're not American. And he was speaking to reporters shortly after Republicans successfully blocked the Voting Rights Advancement Act. And McConnell said the concern is misplaced because let's just play the actual audio. Could you play that right now? We have that audio of what he had to say.
Message for voters of color who are concerned that without the John L. Lewis Voting Rights Act, they're not going to be able to vote in the midterm?
Well, the concern is misplaced because if you look at the statistics, African American voters are voting in just as high a percentage as Americans. A recent survey, 94% of Americans thought it was easy to vote. This is not a problem.
So there you heard Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell's comments after Republicans blocked the John R. Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act last week. However, in contrary to his statement, studies do demonstrate that voting restrictions are disproportionately obstructing the right of people of color. And so, as you would expect, many Democrats called out his comments. And you know, Democratic Illinois Congressman Bobby Rush tweeted, "African Americans are hashtag Mitch please," which became a trending hashtag on this statement. Meanwhile, Malcolm Kenyatta, a Democratic Senate candidate in Pennsylvania, described McConnell's remarks as a dog whistle. And that's actually what we're going to sort of look at: is did he misspeak, and what did that mean? I think he did try to correct his statement, and we'll play that right now, I think.
The omitted word is all, not almost, sorry. I want to take an opportunity out there here to address the outrageous mischaracterization of my history and record on voting rights and race relations as a result of inadvertently leaving out the word almost in my comments the other day. Thanks a lot.
Here, his staffers are talking to him. Letting him know he got it wrong again.
The omitted word is all, not almost. Sorry.
Yeah, that's you're listening to Senator Mitch McConnell, and his attempt to try to correct the record after he last week was had implied that that black voters are not actually Americans in his statements after the Republicans blocking the passage of the John R. Lewis voting rights legislation. And so, you know, I'd like to reintroduce the show for those of you just tuning in now. This is American Standoff. Good morning. It's a live talk radio show. So I do encourage you to call into the studio if you want to be part of this conversation. You can call in at 503-231-8187. And this is Jacqueline Keeler. I'm your host. And what, you know, maybe we should take a look at what the bill would have done, right? I mean, what would this voting legislation have done? It would have banned partisan gerrymandering, protected election interference, required early voting and same-day registration, and restored the pre-clearance provision central to the vote. And I actually discussed last week how that pre-clearance provision has led to a lot of local state initiatives to basically make voting more difficult for people of color and minority groups. And so and I've covered this myself as a journalist in Indian country, and how that's impacted Native communities. This bill actually comes amid unprecedented concern over the future of U.S. democracy, which one in three Americans right now, studies have come out showing that one in three Americans believe Joe Biden was not legitimately elected. And one of the things that I want to point out is that those one in three Americans are not just coming from all different ethnicities and racial groups in America. They're coming primarily from white Americans. And part of what we want to talk about in American Standoff is the role of white supremacy in the dismantling of democracy that we are witnessing today all around us, and what that means. And part of the show wants to address this because I feel that a lot of, particularly Beltway pundits and reporters are unwilling to discuss this. And so the issue is being buried in language that seems to implicate all Americans in this in these belief systems that are undermining our democracy. And so once again, I'd like to encourage folks to call in. This is American Standoff. I'm Jacqueline Keeler, and we are a live talk radio show, so we would really appreciate to hear your voices as well. What did you think of Mitch McConnell's statement, and what does it mean to you about the actual nature of power in this country? And or as I like to say, this colony. I believe the United States is still a colony, and I'll feed into more of that in a bit. And this is Jacqueline Keeler. I'm your host, and you can call into the studio at 503-231-8187. And to introduce myself a little bit more, I'd like to say in my own language, She'e Jacqueline Keeler, Yunishke. My name is Jacqueline Keeler. And in the Navajo way, we introduce ourselves to our clans. I am a citizen of the Navajo Nation, also known as the Dene people, and through my mother's side. And I am also, in our own language, we say Ihantawan Dakota on my father's side. And so I'd like to also not take this moment to acknowledge that what we now call Portland, Oregon, is actually the ancestral and the present land, I should say, of the Multnomah, Wasco, Kahlamet, Clackamas, Cowlitz bands of Chinook, Tualatin, Kalapuya, Mohawk, and I've been also writing about a lot of the local tribal issues here for different publications like Oregon Business Magazine, and actually a piece coming out soon in Sierra Magazine concerning land acknowledgments. And a year ago, on January 6th, once again, we all saw folks, these white, primarily white people, storming the Capitol, right? And we saw this, and now we're watching. We're going to do another show about how all the different federal cases are going. There are over, I think, 200 people presently, prosecuted. But we saw what happened. But do we understand what happened when we saw those people storming the Capitol, taking on, the Capitol Police, and actually bringing nooses to hang Pence, right? And if he didn't agree to basically not certify the election, right? And of Biden. But in the years since, what have we learned? And today we are discussing Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell's misspeaking about black voters and voting access. And we just played his remarks saying, this is Mitch McConnell's statement, not my own. The concern is misplaced because if you look at the statistics, African-American voters are voting in just as high a percentage as Americans. And what was notable about that statement was that he didn't say all Americans, but he seemed to suggest that African-Americans were not Americans. And so, in fact, studies indicate that voting restrictions like those passed by 19 states in the past year disproportionately impact voters of color. And I'd like to read a bit from the Brennan Center for Justice's Voting Laws Roundup, which came out in December. Between January 1st and December 7th, at least 19 states passed 34 laws on access to voting. More than 440 bills with provisions that restrict voting access have been introduced in 49 states in the 2021 legislative session. 440 bills. These numbers are extraordinary. State legislatures enacted far more restrictive voting laws in 2021 than in any year since the Brennan Center began tracking voting legislation in 2011. More than a third of all restrictive voting laws enacted since then were passed this year. Right. So a third of all the different voting restriction laws were passed in 2021. That's like in a 10-year period. And so in a new trend this year, legislators introduced bills to allow partisan actors, right? And so what we've seen a lot of reporting recently about, the attempts to be fake electors. That's been coming out, covered a lot, where they created fake letters and they, to sort of be able to challenge the election results in their states. And so these election sabotage bills, which are discussed further in the study, would have empowered a variety of partisan actors to reject or meddle with election results. Some of these bills, for example, Arizona HB 2720, would have empowered state legislatures to reject the results of an election. And as a Native journalist, and as a Diné woman, I have covered the role of Navajo in deciding who the Senate outcomes and of Native voters in Arizona, which has one of the highest populations of Native people in the country. The role of the Native vote in tipping the election to the Democrats, particularly the last two Senate campaigns, where, you know, Arizona is now is a red state, but is represented by two Democratic senators. And I did a lot of reporting on this during the midterm, and I definitely credit that to the Navajo vote, a very large voting bloc, which is like 80% Democrat in northern Arizona. And so these attempts to buy state legislators in Arizona to suppress this vote, to suppress an inconvenient vote of Native people in their state, is we're back in the 1960s, which I mentioned last show, how my traditional Navajo grandparents, who didn't speak English, were not literate in English, they and many of their generation were not educated. They did not go. I think only like 5 or 6% of their generation went to boarding schools. And so you're talking about a very traditional Navajo group of elders that were, and Navajos in general, even the younger generation in the 60s, were not allowed to vote. And so in Arizona. And so Arizona was a state that was subject to the Voting Rights Act and a way to protect voters like our Diné people, and so it wasn't until the implementation of the Voting Rights Act that my grandparents could vote in the state of Arizona. And so these bills that are happening now in 2021, right? Almost 60 years later, 55 years later, they're trying to turn the clock back and maintain control of the state for a growing white minority. Well, I guess it's not quite a minority yet in Arizona because of the very large growth of Phoenix, which apparently, despite being located in a desert, requiring a lot of resources to be able to run people's air conditioners and provide water, resources stolen from in the Navajo Nation and the Hopi Nations and many other tribes in the area, and that endanger those communities with the strip coal mining and the water theft that's gone on. Phoenix is the number one growing city in America today. It's extraordinary, and nobody seems to be taking into account the resources that has been stolen from Native Nations. There's like a huge methane cloud you can see over the Four Corners region, where those coal fueled power plants were built in the Four Corners area. On the Navajo Nation, using coal strip mines from the Navajo Nation to power the growth of Phoenix in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And so it's, and Las Vegas as well. Those two cities took a lot from the tribes in Arizona and in other area, Utah and Colorado, and to grow those metropolises from very small communities they were in the early 20th century to what they became today. But I'm actually working on a TV series about art, so it's on my mind. But I would really, once again, I would like to encourage you to call in. This is American Standoff. We're a live talk radio show, so please call in. And if you'd like to be part of this conversation discussing how do you feel about what Mitch McConnell, and the number for the studio is 503-231-8187. And this is Jacqueline Keeler, I'm your host. And call in. What do you think of McConnell's statements regarding black voters? And in a recent interview with Senator Cory Booker, actually which occurred before the vote itself, Joy Reid on her show, the Senate debate on federal voting rights protections and how many Republicans promote there's no election subversion taking place in GOP-leaning states. Can we play the audio of her interviewing Cory Booker, Senator Booker?
Well, McConnell claims that this is about one party rewriting election laws. He should be referring to what his party is doing in state after state right now on party line, simple majority votes, or through executive action. Take the so-called free state of Florida, where Chairman Ron DeSantis is doing everything he can to prevent people from voting or to outright intimidate them if they try. His latest authoritarian idea is to create, get this, a literal personal police force to oversee state elections that would answer only to him. The job of the Orwellian-titled Office of Election Crimes and Security would be to investigate, detect, apprehend, and arrest anyone for an alleged violation of election laws, with the power to monitor voters and even arrest them. So does Ron plan to have his secret police arrest Trump voters? Since the heart of election fraud in Florida seems to be the MAGA-loving fantasy land senior community called the Villages, where four people have been arrested just in the past month alone for casting fraudulent votes for Donald Trump. The junior Don has also taken it upon himself to meddle in the state's congressional redistricting process, submitting his own map, which, you guessed it, dilutes the voting power of people of color, cutting in half the number of majority African-American districts, splitting up Hispanic voters in South Florida districts, and giving Republicans an eight-seat advantage. I guess when President Biden spoke of whether Republicans wanted to be Bull Connor, DeSantis was at home raising his hand. Me, I want to be Bull Connor. And then there's Texas, where the sweeping Republican voting law enacted just last year, SB 1, is already suppressing the vote ahead of the Lone Star State's March 1st primaries. Election officials in some of the state's largest and mostly urban and diverse counties are rejecting an unprecedented number of mail-in ballot applications, including more than half in one county alone, because they don't meet voter ID requirements under the new law. And since the law required new voter registration forms, it's led to a shortage and fewer registration forms available to voting groups. There's also Virginia, which seems intent on turning itself into Florida North, now that Trumpy wolf in sheep's clothing Glenn Youngkin is in the governor's mansion. Republican lawmakers have filed 20 bills, 20, restricting access to absentee voting after record numbers of Virginians did just that, thanks to the state Democrats expanding voting options. And on that note, Senator, thank you for being here.
It's beyond even Mitch McConnell. And now we have a reality. Republicans are saying we don't need this, but the facts are the facts. Are we comfortable living in a nation where the average black voter right now in America has to wait twice as long to vote as the average white voter? What does that mean in places from Texas to Georgia, where you see people having 2, 3, 5, 7, 8, 9 hour waits? What does that do? It discourages people from voting. And that's not the only laws that are being passed, finally tailored to discourage certain populations, from young people, Native Americans, African Americans. These are the facts.
Yeah. So that was Senator Cory Booker commenting on the necessity for voting rights legislation to be passed, and being reviewed by Joy Reid on her show The Ride Out, and the we've been looking at these studies that are coming out now a year after the storming of the Capitol to try to reverse the results of the presidential election in the United States. And one of the reasons that I decided to do this series was the fact that I felt that mainstream reporters, particularly those that report on DC, the reporting excises the role of in all of this, in white voters' roles. But the studies coming out really show that there is a very strong correlation between perceiving yourself as white in this country and supporting this insurrection and the false ideas behind it, the big lie, as they say, the big lie being that Trump won the presidential election in 2020 and it was stolen from him, and that Biden is a not repeating this to say I agree with it, but just to clarify what exactly is what people are thinking. And these people are primarily white Americans. And so for the show, American Standoff is looking at why the problem that is, what is the problem, which is white supremacy, is the elephant in the room, but is not being named, right? And I think this is very damaging for our ability as Americans to come together on this issue and to understand it, if we don't discuss things as they really are, right? And the concept of whiteness is an interesting concept. It's something very new in human history, and we tend to take it for granted, you know, not look at the history, how it developed in the 1600s under the plantation system in Virginia, a system ruled by elites, You know, many of the plantation owners were actually members of noble families in England, and they were perpetuating a system of inequality, and they used race as perceived differences in color, to basically to be able to maintain control over a group, and then to maintain another level of control over white people who were of a lesser status, and to pit those two groups against each other. And so and this is really the source of our modern concept of race, right? And it is a very American thing. This was born in the state of Virginia. And I think I mentioned before that I've spoken a couple times in Virginia. I've actually been invited to speak at the College of William and Mary, and then also at University of Virginia in Charlottesville. So I've gone to the last 3 years, and spoken to the students there. And when you drive around Virginia, you'll notice that there's all these signs that say things like, "Vote Virginia is for lovers," "Virginia is the birthplace of democracy." But what they don't mention is that Virginia is the birthplace of racism, and this sort of virus of whiteness. I would say that the very concept of whiteness is damaging our democracy and damaging our world, because the impacts affect not only us in the United States politically and personally. I see a lot of white privilege playing out in roles of in ways that could only be described as violence and terror over people of color in this country, and that has a very long historical role here, in this colony, in the administration of this colony. And as I said before, I view the United States as a colony, not as a country, because this is not its homeland. And I will be also bringing up pieces of a speech that I give about how the United States is still a colony and not a country, and how most Americans are actually colonists. They're not actually citizens. I did a kind of a course that was taught in San Francisco from Batita Martinez, who is a very well-known Chicana activist and scholar, and she taught a community class called Conquering White Supremacy. That was what I think it was called, and it was a really interesting class, and I think it actually had to be discontinued because it did make the white participants feel very uncomfortable, and they actually sort of rose up against her. She was, I think, one of the authors of 500 Years of, I think, Chicana History, and an amazing voice and thinker. And she, she would talk about how she wouldn't call Americans Americans, because she'd make the point that, the Americas go from North to Central to South America. Everyone on this hemisphere could be called an American. Not that I really love the word American or America. As an indigenous person, we have our own name for this hemisphere. But she would say how she would call American or citizens of the United States United Stations. And so that's a term that I don't think has ever caught on, United Stations. Why not just call yourself by your country, which is the United States, right? I mean, that's what every other country does. And so by just putting that out there. So I'd like to encourage you all to call. Be quiet out there. Maybe this is a topic that makes people feel understand that. But I would still like to hear what you think and how you feel about what Mitch McConnell said about black voters. I guess he claims he misspoke and meant to say all Americans versus Americans. And what you think of the present situation on voting rights in this country and the attempts to sort of obstruct the right of people of color to vote. You can call in here to the studio at 503-231-8187. And I'm Jacqueline Keeler, your host, and this is the show American Standoff. As we discussed last week, polling shows that a significant majority, 55% of Republicans, would be more likely to vote for a GOP candidate running in the 2020 midterm elections if that candidate questions the legitimacy of Biden's victory. right? 55%, that's the majority of Republicans. And now even the Republicans with the courage to stand up to Trump's litmus test of possible defeat, right? By an electorate following the lead of their party leaders and megaphones of malicious delegations from conservative media. And so that is, that's so we are going into the midterms, you know, with a very, very a large part of the electorate demanding that the candidates that they vote for all over the country basically promise swear fealty to Trump. Trump is not in office anymore. He is not on social media anymore, on Twitter and Facebook, I should say. But he is he still commands incredible part loyalty from Republican voters. Hello?
You're on.
Okay, great. Sorry. Hello. Sorry about that. I actually got disconnected. So my audio went off. But yeah, the as I was saying, that last week we discussed polling that showed a significant majority, 55% of Republican voters, were more likely to vote for a GOP candidate running in the 2022 midterm elections who questioned legitimacy of Biden's victory. Right? That's where we are right now, a year after the storming of the Capitol. And not only do a large number of Americans believe that the election was stolen, but 147 Republican lawmakers still have results after the Capitol attack. This is after they faced, seeing people storm the Capitol itself. And but let's look at some more recent findings of polling data from the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. And I'm going to read from a couple paragraphs from their recent findings. 1 year after thousands of supporters of former President Donald Trump stormed the U.S. Capitol in an attempt to protest and disrupt the certification of Joe Biden's victory in the 2020 presidential election, the results of a new National University of Massachusetts Amherst poll released today show 71% of Republicans and one-third of the nation continue to believe that Biden's victory was illegitimate. So 71% of Republicans and one-third of the country believe that Biden, that they believe Trump won. They believe that Biden didn't win. And that Republicans continue to blame Democrats, Antifa, for the events of January 6th. So they also oppose both the continuation of law enforcement efforts to prosecute the rioters and attempts to learn more about what happened that day. So 71% of Republicans oppose any sort of investigation of what happened that day on the Capitol insurrection. And they blame, actually, Democrats, Antifa, and Capitol Police for what happened.
Jacqueline, we have a caller.
Okay, great. Hello, caller.
Dempsey.
Oh, Dempsey.
Yes. Hello, everyone. Thank you for taking my call. I've been listening to and watching a lot of commentary about Mitch McConnell and what he said recently, and I didn't hear anyone talk about his body language. Like when he said the words African-Americans, his hand was gesturing outwards, and when he finished that phrase and he said that they have been voting like Americans, he brought his hand back to point at himself. And I also just thought about the fact that, like, this is not surprising for a lot of people, and it it's the reason why the black sanitation workers wore signs that said "I am a man," and it's the same reason like Black Lives Matter, because politicians like himself have been treating black people like they're not humans. And so anyway, it's not anything new, and I just thought I would, mention that he can walk it back as much as he wants, but like it's it was too painfully obvious.
Yep.
So,
Thank you. Yeah, I think body language does tell a lot. And yeah, I think he basically, he misspoke the truth of what he felt, you know, and it was revealing about, and his actions are totally revealing. I mean, you know, the legislation he's blocked and things that he's attempted to do, I mean, he has done, and his party supports, and the way he's used the, you know, the filibuster and things to basically strangle any discussion on these issues, and refusing to even bring them up for a vote.
Mm. Yeah, I heard yesterday that the filibuster has been ended. Is that right?
Let me see here. I don't think so. They won't be able to filibuster President Biden's new Supreme Court nominee. So that is something that is good. They did do that to block the previous. And Senator Kyrsten Sinema, the Arizona senator, Democratic senator, she was actually censured by her party in Arizona for her vote to keep the filibuster. So the sort of what they call moderates, her senator Sinema and Senator Manchin from West Virginia, these quote unquote moderate Democrats are just basically making themselves sort of the decider and the kings. Our queen of the Senate, and so it's pretty we'll see how that goes. I'm looking for it, and I will look more closely at the Supreme Court nominee in a future show when it becomes clear who Biden's going to nominate and what that could mean and how that's going to play out. The ability of Mitchell, of Senator Minority Leader Mitchell, Mitch McConnell, to control, prevent former President Obama to even make a Supreme Court, appointment is really one of the. It was obvious. It's one of the most racist and dishonorable chapters in recent America. I mean, there's so many of them, but I would say that is definitely a notable one because. Of course, the Supreme Court, is making major decisions, and now that they have a de facto conservative majority, all sorts of rights are under in danger. And of course, we've seen that with the previous decisions they made, particularly restricting the Voting Rights Act and giving corporate sort of rights, citizenship rights to corporations. These have had a huge impact on our present situation, allowing money to flood into candidates from corporations, and basically preventing any oversight over gerrymandering and different voting election laws that are being passed at the state level that are meant to prevent people of color from voting, Black and Indigenous people of color from voting. So. Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for your comments. How do you feel about the fact that that the reporting that's going on that doesn't really mention that it's white voters who are the Trump voters and who are basically de facto supporting the suppression of people of color from voting?
Again, I don't think it's anything all that new. These kind of things don't get reported. Just like Americans don't know a lot of things that they should know that should affect the way they think and vote. So it's another way of letting people think that those voters don't count, even that they're not there. That's what I would say.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah, I definitely think I'm really disappointed in journalists and as a journalist to see them not naming the real issues at hand, being afraid to say that it's white voters who are, who believe Biden's victory is illegitimate, white voters who are promoting, who will believe the big lie that it was stolen and are actually the ones who are storming the Capitol. It seems to me that's cowardly, and they're not living up to their role to inform the public and to accurately describe what's going on. So that's all. Well, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. And so I'm going to continue. Let's continue taking a look at the polling that we have from University of Massachusetts Amherst poll that just came out past week. December 28th, 2021. And this poll, which was of 1,000 respondents, found that only 58% of Americans believe that Biden's electoral victory was legitimate, with more than a fifth, 22%, saying that it was definitely not legitimate. So numbers nearly identical to an April 2021 UMass Amherst poll, 59% and 24%. Only one-fifth of Republicans, 21%, view Biden's victory as a legitimate. So only one in five Republicans believe that Biden is the legitimate president of the United States right now. One in five. That is absolutely extraordinary. I mean, so this is what we're going into the midterms with. This is what we are facing the 2024 election with. And we'll see if that changes, if people are able to change their minds, or whether, you know, as it appears in the past year, one of the reasons I feel like these things don't change, and what really drives people to these conclusions, is the structure of colonialism. And this is what I really describe in my book, Standoff, which is in the book I compare two different takeovers. One is the one that happened here in January in Oregon, of the Bundy takeovers, of the Ammon Bundy's takeover of the Mount Hill Wildlife Refuge, and I'd written before about in 2014 about Clive and Bundy's takeover, his standoff with the Bureau of Land Management, Clive and Bundy being Ammon Bundy's father, when the Bureau of Land Management attempted to remove his cattle, which were illegally grazing over about 500,000 acres of public land, and some of it, of course, native Paiute land as well, and then comparing that standoff at Mount Hill to the standoff that occurred 6 months later on the Standing Rock Sioux, just north of the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation in North Dakota, over the Dakota Access Pipeline, which was being built and threatened all the water downstream on the Missouri River, and particularly that just 1 mile downstream, which was the main water intake for the Standing Rock Sioux tribe. And so I covered both of those stories in 2016, and so my book really analyzes both of them, not only the reaction, how each of them were treated, but also what are the origins of this political divide in the country. And so it's, I think for me as a Native person, I really zeroed in, and I've described this before on the show, we have this idea of creation stories or origin stories as being sort of these mythical things that are interesting but not really relevant, right? But when you look at an origin story or a creation story, it has in it implicitly certain assumptions about what a people are and what they do, right? What the relationship is to the land, what the relationship is to other people and the other animals and other life that lives on the land, and from that, those sort of assumptions and rules come consequences, come outcomes, and so I like to call these implicit assumptions that go into creation stories or origin stories of people. To algorithms, right? I'm married to a software engineer, so he talks a lot about algorithms, and so we look at algorithms as sort of being these functions, these if-then statements, if you will, and so within a colony's origin story, there are built-in assumptions about their purpose, their reason for being there, and I think you can define it pretty simply, and it's basically a colonist goes to another person's homeland, another people's homeland, and they basically occupy it, and they export the wealth from that homeland back to their ruling class, to their 1%. And everything they do can fit within this very simple sort of description, right? Definition. And within that definition are built-in assumptions, assumptions of dominion over the land. assumptions that the indigenous people who live there don't have any rights, right? And this is, I discussed also how this is built into actually U.S. federal law, the doctrine of discovery, which was first articulated in the around 1830 by the Supreme Court, Chief Justice John Marshall, and in which he decided, he set out a sort of this doctrine that said that only discovering Christian countries could have title to the land. That indigenous people, that all the only title we had was that of animals, of use and occupancy, right? We don't have title. We don't have the simple title. And I described how, you know, even even, you know, liberal justices like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you know, confined by precedent, have cited this law to deny Native nations. The case was in 2005, the city of Sherrill, New York, versus the United Nations of New York, and basically to deny the United Nations a title to the land because they were not European, they are not discovering, and they're not Christian, so therefore they can't have title to their own homeland that they have occupied for 1,000 years, in fact, the Iroquois Confederacy goes back 1,000 years. And so it's so these laws and these ideas form a structure that promotes white supremacy and white privilege. And so you have these outcomes, you have these polls. And I've described before many times on the show and also on Paul Rowland's Wednesday Talk Radio, which I have been co-hosting once a month for a few years now. The idea that I see white privilege as the house that white supremacy built. And that whiteness means, if you consider yourself to be white and are considered white by the colonial system, you basically live in that house. And that to a certain extent, you don't know the real world because the house is what you live in. It dictates where you can walk. You go up the stairs, you go down the hallway. It dictates what you see out the window. The view that it frames is all you really know. And so it's very hard to grapple with these ideas and to understand what's going on when you live in that house. Those of us who are outside of that house, people of color, you know, and we can see the house. We can see the shape of it because we are outside of it. And we can see the people inside and say, hey, look, this is the real world out here, right? And so I believe that this is the structural limitations imposed by not only the history of colonization of this country and you know, the need to basically to maintain the sort of elite planter class rule over the colony of Virginia, right? And which was, as I've noted before, started as a corporation, right? A joint stock company. So the corporate, you know, sort of where, you know, corporations have rights to basically participate in our electoral process by donating money and everything. You know, it has a really old history. I mean, you know, as I mentioned before, the monarch, Queen Elizabeth I, could not afford to, her treasury could not afford to fund exploration and colonization. So she turned to her subjects and allowed them to create these joint stock companies. And they've already been existing, but she definitely supported them and invested in some of them as well, and to share the basically the risk. So Virginia was actually started by a joint stock company called the Virginia Company of London Adventures, and there are many other famous companies. You know, you have the Hudson Bay Company and of course the East India Company, which it basically ended up taking over India and transferring it to Britain to rule as part of its the crown and its jewel of its empire, and so this sort of corporate model is deeply part of the origin story of colonists, and so it's so I explain all this to explain why is it that white Americans are behaving this way? Why are they believing these things? Why is it so easy for them to do this? And I think we do need a structural analysis to understand it. So, and as I mentioned, the University of Massachusetts Amherst poll found that one-fifth of Republicans, 21% view Biden's victory as legitimate. So I'd also like to encourage you to call in to the studio if you want to be part of this conversation. What do you think of this polling? What do you think this means? Do you think that whiteness is a problem in this country and really for the world when you look at the impact it has in climate change denialism? You can call in here at 503-231-8187. And I'm Jacqueline Keeler, your host, and this is American Standoff. And we are discussing the political standoff in this country today that is endangering democracy. I'll go ahead and read further from the University of Massachusetts Amherst poll, which came out in December 28th, 2021, and almost a year after the January 6th Capitol attack. And the poll is examining the political division over the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. So they write that Republicans continue to defend the events of January 6th and those who perpetuated the attacks on the Capitol, with 80% describing the events as a protest. So here you have Republicans, 80% of them are describing an insurrection at the Capitol, the U.S. Capitol, as a protest. And while the majority, 55% of all respondents to the poll, use the term riot, right? And so most Americans call it a riot, 55%, but Republicans, 80%, call it a protest. And while 62% of Republicans said the perpetrators were protesters, more than a quarter, 26%, deemed the pro-Trump horde patriots. All right, the horde is, that's coming actually from the poll press release. So, but the, more than a quarter of Republicans believe that those who rallied and stormed the Capitol on January 6, 2021, were actually patriots. That's pretty extraordinary. One in four Republicans believe this. And, similar numbers, 27% also said they were Antifa. So, almost 30%, one in three Trump Republicans, I should say, Republicans generally, not just Trump, they believe that that the Antifa is like did this. It's amazing. Democrats meanwhile describe them as insurrectionists, white nationalists, and rioters. So 68% of Democrats describe the folks who stormed the Capitol as insurrectionists. 67% a mob, and 64% terrorists. We have another caller. Hello?
Susanna.
Hi, Susanna.
Hi. So I'm thinking about Trump supporters. I've often thought about Trump supporters because in Oregon, especially with Timber Unity, who have taken over the tactics, is a big deal in Oregon. And I live in the country, and I've had a farm for 50 years and watched animals and alpha beta behavior. And I see Trump as exhibiting lots and lots of alpha behavior because he's not alpha. He's a wannabe. And wannabe alphas in the animal kingdom can be the very worst as they strive to take over dominance and be alpha. And I see the billionaires as the pinnacle alpha male, and Trump always wanted to be that way. And being president gave him an opportunity, and he loved it. And I see my Trump friends who are considered, you know, businessmen and stuff, really responding to that alpha behavior of Trump, and also feeling very secure that Trump would protect business interests, which he did totally. And he was totally into the scratch my back, I'll scratch your back, and any wheel and deal he didn't want to walk away from if it benefited him. And then I just want to say one more thing, if you don't mind, about Trump supporters. It is that there's also, for people that have been shut out of the system, We are a very class society. If you are educated, if you have a mannerism in speech that shows that you're educated, if you can show degrees, people are always what I call credentialing over where they went to school. This is among the educated people with degrees. They're always showing off degrees in conversation. And it's also very important in job applications. So uneducated people, I think, are often felt shut out, and I think rightfully so, of a class system. And Trump really appealed to them. So I see two different kind of segments that Trump really appealed to. And then can I just comment on one thing, because you're from Navajo Nation. Do you remember when the whole Navajo Nation vote was hidden? Something happened to it back, was it 2000? Maybe? When it wasn't just Florida that was lost by machinations to Bush, I call Baby Bush, but the Navajo Nation was also lost, and Ohio was extremely manipulated. So voter manipulation has changed in technique, but is been alive and well and very strong since the year 2000. Anyway, I'm sorry, I can be quiet now.
Oh, no, thank you so much. Yeah, I don't know about so you're saying voter suppression took place against Navajo voters in the 2000 election.
No, it wasn't suppression. The vote disappeared.
The vote disappeared. Oh, the vote was stolen?
Literally. It disappeared. It was never registered.
I don't know the fine details.
You might be interested, because of your background and your interest, to research that, to really what happened. And I'm almost sure it was the 2000 election.
Mm-hmm. Wow, I will definitely look into that. It's fascinating. Yeah, I will definitely. Thank you so much for bringing that to my attention. I wasn't aware of that. The Trump, I'm really glad you brought up timber unity, because I think that's something that we need to examine more closely. I see that Mother Jones has an article that came out just today, January 27th, examining the ties between the timber industry and extremists, and looking particularly at the Oregon group Timber Unity, which had connections to the Capitol riots. This is written by Rebecca Lieber, a reporter for Mother Jones. And she writes, in March, my colleague Ali Breland and I wrote about a pro-logging anti-climate group called Timber Unity that helped to scuttle Oregon legislation for cap and trade in 2019 and 2020. To the average Oregon voter, Timber Unity appeared to be an organic backlash fueled by frustrated rural voters in a state dominated by Democrats. The group's rallies, which drew hundreds and sometimes thousands of truckers and loggers to the Capitol, made it appear that it had broad support among Republican voters. But actually, Timber Unity was founded and bankrolled by the logging industry, specifically Andrew Miller, CEO of a timber company called Stimson Lumber. At Timber Unity's urging in June 2019, Republican legislators staged a walkout that denied the government's two-thirds quorum to function, thus stalling climate legislation indefinitely. Timber Unity's hijinks in the state legislature were coming to a head just as COVID-19 became a national emergency, depriving the state of a normal working legislative session at the start of the crisis. So yeah, I think you might recall that when our legislators fled to other states like Idaho, so Republican legislators, so that a quorum could not be established at the state legislature to actually address these cap and trade votes. And so that was an interesting moment, and also another moment at the local level here, at the state level here in Oregon, that demonstrates the divide that is happening right now across the country. And were you aware?
Hello? Yeah,
yes.
Were you aware of the corporate funding behind Timber Unity?
She's gone. She's not on air anymore.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you. All right. Well, I would once again thank you so much for your call. And I'd really like to encourage other folks to call in as well. The Timber Unity elements here in Oregon. I definitely want to take a closer look at that. Once again, this is American Standoff, and we're a call-in talk radio show, so please feel free to call in. Today we are discussing, Mitch McConnell's comments last week after blocking the passage of the voting rights legislation and basically saying that Black Americans are not Americans.
We're out of time.
We're out of time? Oh, sorry. Okay. Thank you so much. I guess I had run late. I hadn't realized that. This is Jack.